This is Josh Sumby, and I'm a sales agronomist for CHS Ag Services in Drayton, North Dakota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network. CHS Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Thursday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson. We'll also be hearing reports from Don Wick at the CHS annual meeting in Minneapolis, and our own Jamie Dickerman in Fargo for the American Crystal Sugar Company and Red River Valley Sugar Beet Growers Association joint convention. But we go to Minneapolis, where the CHS annual meeting is underway. The ever-changing trade flows globally, part of the conversation at that event. Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Don Wick has more in this report.
According to CHS Executive Vice President of Ag Business, John Griffith, China has purchased approximately one-third of the 12 million metric ton total. That amount of soybeans is expected to be purchased before the end of the year, just a few short weeks away.
Of course, the window is tight before Brazilian harvest comes into full effect, probably by March. And so this window that they're trying to buy from is closing on us because we got kind of a late start to this year's campaign, of course, with the tariff situation. So it's going to be difficult, I think, Don, to get there, but they're clearly on a path in that direction, and I think that we're fairly optimistic that they'll get close to that 12 million tons, if not achieve that. Just a reminder, 12 million tons is about half of what the recent history was as well, so it's a step in the right direction, but we got a late start. It's a smaller quantity than what we would have generally hoped for or needed given the size of the crop, but it's very, very welcome demand.
There is still a 10% tariff in place on all Chinese soybean sales for the United States. That is equal to about $1.30 per bushel in tariff costs.
So that's still a trade barrier that needs to be resolved for there to be truly free and fair trade. So we continue to advocate for the removal of that last 10% to put us on an even playing field with Brazil. And as you know, Brazil has expanded their production significantly over the years, and that alone is a challenge, let alone having a 10% disadvantage in the pricing to that private sector as well.
So tell me, where does CHS, when you take a look globally, see opportunity to be moving our grain?
Specific to China, there's no place on planet Earth that can take and replace the demand that China typically has in the soybean market. China represents 65% of the entire global soybean trade. So relative to soybeans, it's crucially important that we have some access there, and we are getting some of that access now.
Griffith said work is also underway to capture demand for U.S. soybeans in other parts of the world, including Southeast Asia, Europe, and North Africa. The CHS annual meeting continues through tomorrow. Reporting from Minneapolis, I'm Don Wick on the Red River Farm Network.
Speaking at the CHS annual meeting, Advance Economic Solutions President Bill Lapp sees the trade relationship between the United States and China as tentative at best.
Well, we have to get past our hurdles on trade first and foremost, and I think they're only reluctantly purchasing our soybeans based on a trade deal that's nominal at this point. I don't think we've seen the actual words that would go into that trade agreement. So I think they're going to buy most of what they promised for 2026, the 12 million tons. But I'm wondering if we'll ever get back to where we were before. That's a pretty big problem. We've done a lot to encourage production outside the U.S.
Looking forward over the next 5 years, Lapp said there are too many unknowns.
Will Russia continue to be a dominant force in wheat exports? Will China resume some exports of U.S. agricultural products over that time, either because of demand or because of better trade policy? Will Southeast Asia continue to grow as an opportunity, a market for U.S. agricultural products that pushes our trade balance in agriculture back positive? There's some things that are certain and several things that are hanging the balance at this point.
European Union member states have approved the European Commission's new trade agreement with the U.S., but the European Parliament is preparing to challenge parts of the deal it views as unfair. The dispute follows President Donald Trump's move to triple tariffs on EU products, while Brussels eliminated duties on U.S. imports, raising concerns about uneven market access. EU countries agreed in late November to lower tariffs on U.S. goods under the agreement reached last summer, though Critics say the changes disadvantage European exporters. A proposed 5-year sunset clause was debated but ultimately rejected, and both the Council and Parliament must finalize the deal by next spring. USDA is now taking applications for the America First Trade Promotion Program, a $285 million effort aimed at boosting U.S. agricultural exports. Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Luke Lindberg says the program is designed to strengthen existing promotion tools.
The $285 million program that essentially doubles our investment in those trade promotion programs that help sell our products. Many of our cooperators around the country that represent all of our different commodity groups, those folks get dollars from USDA to market their products overseas, participate in trade missions, organize their own trade missions, really go about the business of selling American agriculture.
The application window closes January 23rd, and additional information on the program is available at grants.gov. The U.S. Trade Representative's Office is beginning a 3-day listening session today with the focus on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement. The United States is seeking feedback ahead of next year's review of the trade agreement. And India expects to finalize a new trade deal with the U.S. before the end of 2025, with most issues reportedly resolved. Talks will first focus on a trade framework to address reciprocal tariffs, while other concerns can be handled politically. The move comes as the U.S. pressures India to reduce oil purchases from Russia and lower tariffs on multiple sectors, including agricultural trade. For more information from the Red River Farm Network, visit Facebook and X. You can also find stories, podcasts, and more at rrfn.com. You're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Farm news on the Red River Farm Network. The joint meeting between the American Crystal Sugar Company and the Red River Valley Sugar Beet Growers Association is in Fargo today, where Red River Farm Network farm broadcaster Jeremy Dickerman caught up with USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Brad, great to see you in person. You made the joke. It's below zero here in Fargo today. See a correlation here of some kind.
Yeah, I said in my opening remarks, I'm not sure they're going to invite me back because second time I've been here this year, sub-zero cold both times. There seems to be a pattern, and I told them if they bring me back again, let's please do it in summer next time.
Talking about weather, of course, we've heard so much about La Nina. That's been the term that's been used a lot. To explain to the folks listening right now how that is going to affect our winter weather here in this region.
La Nina, which is a cooling of the equatorial waters in the Pacific between the dateline and the South American coast, has been with us since September. Usually takes at least a few weeks, if not a couple months, for those impacts of that cooler ocean water to begin to affect the jet streams that move across North America. But it does appear that since right before Thanksgiving, we have seen a very La Nina-like pattern developing that I think is largely attributable to what we are seeing going on in the equatorial Pacific. And that is cold weather settling in across most areas east of the Rockies at this point, but certainly the core of the cold across the northern plains, the Midwest, and the Northeast. And I think, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on what you're trying to do, like storing beets like the folks are talking here, that's actually a good thing. But it is going to be a cold winter. It doesn't mean that every single winter day is going to be brutally cold, but if you look at the 90-day average for December, January, February, we are leaning in the direction of below-average temperatures all the way from the northwest through the northern plains into the upper Midwest. At the same time, weakening the subtropical jet stream related to La Nina probably will lead to mild, dry conditions across much of the southern United States, and then those colder and sometimes snowier conditions in the north.
I'm Jamie Dickerman on the Red River Farm Network.
The Mato Grosso Institute of Agricultural Economics left its forecast for 2025-26 corn production unchanged at 51.7 million metric tons. That figure is down nearly 7% from 2023-2024. Soybean planting is up. Soybean production is forecast to drop 7.3% year over year at 47.2 million metric tons. EverAg market analyst Cole Weinkauf says the grains markets are seeing some support from strong export sales, especially in the corn markets.
Grains are trading in a pretty tight range at the moment. I think a lot of it is just kind of waiting to see what we want to do on this balance sheet. On the corn side of things, exports have been the main driver. We saw another shipment heading out towards both Colombia and Mexico here today. We had another great week of exports, and so if we can continue this export pace on corn, maybe see a tiny little bit of pullback here on the national yield number, this corn market definitely has the ability to work higher moving forward here.
USDA reports show corn inspections for export falling to 1.42 million metric tons for the week ending November 27th. That's down from 1.7 million the previous week, while soybean inspections rose to 920,200 metric tons. Wheat inspections dropped to nearly 385,000 metric tons, but remain above last year's pace, with total corn and wheat inspections for the marketing year running ahead of 2024. Corteva range and pasture specialist Abe Smith describes the cow-calf producer as a grass farmer.
Just like you harvest bushels of corn or beans out of a field, they're harvesting grass. It's just going through the cow. And at the end of the year, you're running that cow across the scale. That's your yield, right? So the better that we can do in terms of putting grass on the pasture, the better off cow-calf producers are.
Smith believes annual weeds like common ragweed are taking precious nutrients and resources from grass production. A weed management plan should be a priority.
Many of your crop producers, when they get ready to plant a crop, they already have put a herbicide plan together. They do pre-control and early season post sprays. And I would probably advocate for many producers to take a really good swing at what they believe their weed complex is, what they know is out there, and go out there in probably an early season, maybe not a preseason, but an early season in that mid-May to mid-June time frame, and go out there with a planned herbicide application on many of these pastures, and they can be wildly successful with that.
Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. A recent survey of 1,000 people by Signal showed overwhelming support for plant-based products, with 71% of respondents saying they were familiar with plant-based products, and 85% of respondents viewing them favorably.
Consumer familiarity with plant-based products continues its multi-year rise, with 71% of American consumers now familiar with plant-based products. And remarkably, 85% of American consumers view plant-based products favorably. And we've moved well past the niche status, with 86% of consumers in the United States saying that they're likely to purchase or use plant-based products in the next 3 months.
That's Signal senior partner and pollster John Rogers, who says a majority of responses to the poll viewed the benefits of plant-based products outweighing the disadvantages.
There continues to be a high familiarity with the ag feedstocks like corn, bamboo, hemp, and demonstrates that consumers understand plant-based products are tied to the U.S. agriculture. 71% say the advantages of plant-based products outweigh the disadvantages, indicating strong perceived value across environmental, economic, and practical dimensions. And Americans increasingly connect plant-based innovation with support for farmers, manufacturing jobs, and the rural economies.
The city of San Francisco has filed a lawsuit against 11 major food companies for engaging in unfair and deceptive acts. The San Francisco city attorney claims the U.S. diet is high in ultra-processed foods, increasing health care costs. The lawsuit takes the same approach previously taken with the tobacco industry. Checking quotes, March wheat Minneapolis is 2¾ lower to 573.5. Chicago March wheat's 2¼ higher at 540.5. KC hard red winter wheat's up a nickel at 534.5. December corn up 6 cents at 437.5. January soybeans 4.5 higher to 1120.25. In Winnipeg, January canola is down 650 per metric ton to 622.60 Canadian. On the cattle side, December live cattle are up 215 to 221.10. January feeders up 460 at 336.45. December hogs are at 81.17, 62 cents higher. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you are listening to the Red River Farm Network.